Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to a new episode of Talking About Platforms. My name is Philip Meyer, and with me today are my co-host, Daniel Trabucchi. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Philip.
And our guest, Hanlin Lee. Hi, Hanlin.
Hi, Philip.
Hanlin is an assistant professor in the School of Information at the University of Texas in Austin, and her research is focused on human-computer interaction and social computing, and she has a special focus on data governance, and this is also what I'm very much looking for to talk about today.
But I would say let's start with our usual question. You know, the title of the podcast is Talking About Platforms, and we tend to invite people that talks about platform, but not all of them are actually talking about platform in the same way. So our first question is, what is a platform to you? And even to get a bit more personal, how you end up studying platforms?
Absolutely. Kind of my understanding of a platform is it's a system where a host provides opportunities for workers or suppliers to provide or sell products or services. So what I would call platform, a lot of the system, we see Uber, all the economy systems or marketplaces, I would see those as platforms. But my research focus has been always on content platforms, including social media platforms, peer production sites like Wikipedia, and sometimes rating systems like Google Maps and Yelp. So these are all type of my understanding of content platforms. And I got into this because early in my doctoral program, when I was still getting into this research, my advisor at the time, Brent Hecht, and my colleagues, Isaac Johnson and Nick Vincent, they worked on understanding the value of content for today's digital infrastructures, specifically search engines, how peer production and user-generated content has been immensely helpful and generating value for content platforms. And that's where I picked up and have been working on this for, I guess, past 6 years, focusing on user-generated content and thinking about the value they're producing for platforms.
Super exciting. Thank you for sharing that. I came across one of your writings recently. I think you published it even in 2023 at the ACM conference. It's about the dimensions of data labor. And I became very interested in the topic of data labor. And you mentioned, I think you are the first one in the answering this first questions and actually mentioning the topic of labor and work as an input and a contribution on the platform, and not just talking about, and I don't say that this is the typical answer, but about the transactions of different actors and without mentioning actually like the human side of things. And I very much like the concept of data labor and would like to explore and give you the opportunity to share a bit more about your writing, the piece, and then also how you understand the concept and why you think it's so important, also especially in light of platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad to hear that you find the work interesting. I will say I can give a little summary of the paper. In that paper, we're thinking about how current a lot of the online activities from, like, for example, leaving a rating or generating a piece of content or uploading images, all these type of activities are more and more becoming being monetized by platforms, not only platforms, but also third parties like firms that need to purchase data or purchase content. So that's what motivated us in thinking about data production as labor. I will say I'm definitely standing on the shoulder of many, many giants here, where in the scholar field, there's this concept of digital labor, which encompasses both like crowdsourcing work, but also at the same time, for example, leaving a comment on a YouTube video or playing video games, where all these scholars, all these type of activities that digital labor scholars would argue that they are work. And we're kind of like taking this idea into the modern computing scope and thinking about how a lot of the activities we perform online are generating value. It could be value directly for the platform, but it could also be value for a third party. For example, OpenAI relies on content that we all publish online. So all because of this kind of change or shift in monetization, we are coming up with this concept of data labor as an umbrella term to include all the different type of activities people produce on perform online that are producing value. I will say in the data labor case where a lot in the current situation where a lot of content producers, when they publish content online, there's no direct way for them to tell like the impact of their work. From like you can see, like for example, if I make a edit on Wikipedia or some content platforms, I can see the direct like the content out there. But then this content is going to be, for example, scraped by a third party firm to build maybe large language models or chatbots. This content is going to be sold through API services by the platform to other data broker firms or aggregators. So there's different ways for a piece of content or a piece of data to generate revenue for the platform or for a third party. And I think that's really one of the thorny questions that my research team is focusing on. How can we provide the information and transparency for data contributors to see the impact of the work? Because this is like one of the key directions. I think once we have that information or knowledge, and then we can have conversations around, well, how can we fairly distribute the revenue among all the content contributors? So I think that's definitely like a very important next step once we have a good understanding of the how value is generated.
You know, talking about data, you open up one of my very first passions in the world of platforms. I actually started my research on platforms studying data-driven models. And I kind of developed over the years a kind of personal perspective on this type of topic. And I think I'm quite aligned to what you were saying. So it's part of value creation and also some kind of value distribution, whatever it means, among the various stakeholders of the platform. And you were referring to this concept that I very like, which is the idea of transparency. So being clear and honest with the parties on how these data are actually used, how they are contributing. Still, the question I usually receive, so I'd like to know your opinion on this, are the implications for privacy and somehow the ethical concerns that may lie behind the usage of data. And I was wondering what's your take on this? What's your perspective there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you're right, absolutely right. It's something like that's kind of like there's so many issues that we really should be cautious of. One issue, for example, when we think about like creating a data market or creating like a data like markets where people can sell their data and get paid, my concern there is thinking about how essentially like the Spotify model where your music gets paid and you get played and then you get paid for 1 cent. My concerns for that type of model is that we wouldn't want to necessarily create a situation where very few data creators were the ones that are being paid the majority of the revenue or majority of the they were making a lot of income. So thinking about the income gap between data contributors, how can we create a situation where everyone have somewhat equitably benefits from it? So that's something that I think is kind of the major question I have. But you alluded into it. You also mentioned this privacy issue, which is also something I think there has been a lot of research on like differential privacy, thinking about how to share data sets without invading an individual's privacy rights. So that seems to be a very promising direction to go from here. One thing I'm thinking about where is when we think about the like aggregating data sets, it's really important to have these privacy protections, thinking about how to filter out personal information, And this is a huge issue in thinking about how we get, how firms aggregated social media profiles, like LinkedIn, Facebook. All these profiles are easily accessible for third-party firms where they can just scrape people's names and other like profile images. So that's something also my team is currently working on, thinking about, well, how do actually average social media users think, what are the issues they actually see when their content is being scraped? Since this is all like study in progress, one of the findings that's quite interesting to me is there are very different mindsets when thinking about protecting like your personal profile. For example, a creator who is creating content on Instagram or other social media platform to share knowledge, they tend to have less of an issue when their content is being scraped or accessed by a third party. They think of it as a way of like, I'm sharing knowledge broadly and it's kind of being scraped means that their content is interesting and there's a potential audience out there. But this mindset is obviously only like limited to people who are like aware that they're creating content, they want to put the content up there. For the average social media users, we have seen like people are very averse to this idea of other parties having unauthorized access to their information. So that's something that I think it's a complicated situation where we have to have some sort of either policies or mechanisms that can kind of mitigate these different type of concerns from like an average social media user.
And then you already mentioned the value of the contribution and measuring the value of the contribution. When I'm thinking about the typical platform cases, thinking about Uber, thinking about Airbnb, for me as the party that offers something, be it a ride, be it property that you can rent, it's pretty clear that my main motivation to be active on the platform is to make money, right? And I also have a pretty clear idea about what I can earn. Platform is either transparent or I can figure it out by just putting my offering on and then selling it. And I think it's pretty similar also for platforms that are more about developing something, using a technical infrastructure that is there, developing something, and then also offering the usage of that. While for what I understand as this, be it a social media platform or be it another platform where information is basically generated or curated, and this is the contribution. I know that you did a lot of work with Reddit as a case study. Two questions. So first, how do I measure the value of the contribution on these type of platforms? And I wonder if you did some qualitative analysis and talked to, be it moderators on Reddit or contributors on Wikipedia, why do they do it?
I love that you brought up the example of Uber and thinking, I think like that's a little bit different of the platform than what I've been talking about, like social media platforms where we just use social media for free. But I will argue in the case of Uber, as drivers drive around and like pick passengers up and drop them off, all these traces are collected by Uber, and Uber wouldn't collect it if it were not useful for them. It's very helpful for Uber to develop algorithms, for example, to predict where to put drivers or how to price a trip for the system. So I will argue that like this kind of digital traces data that is even like unwittingly generated by drivers, they are still have an immense amount of value for Uber. So this is where like getting assessment of the data sets come in, where when we think about the Reddit case, the paper that you mentioned, I think it's called the Measuring the Value of Online Volunteer Work, where essentially what we did is we collected all these digital traces that moderators left online, and we use these to assess how many hours they work every day, and then use that hour labor hours as a way to approximate like how much value that Reddit moderators supply to Reddit, or what's the labor subsidy they provided to Reddit every year. So I think for the Reddit case, what we did is we calculated the value based on existing market rates. So essentially there are paid commercial content moderators who work for example, for a sponsored Facebook group, where they get paid for like going into the group, filtering content, or establishing norms or setting up guidelines. So what we did was we just used that hourly rate for our calculation. That's definitely one way of calculating value, thinking about what's the amount of work that goes under like producing piece of content or publishing piece of content or maintaining our community. So that's the approach that we have taken. The another approach, thinking about this assessing value, this is a very, in my view, it's a very complex question. So there's a lot of different methods. Well, another method I have seen these days is asking people to personally attach a value to their work. An example would be kind of setting up an audit. We're asking people how much value you're going to attach to your work. And then we're going to have audits at the end where we pay like the lowest bid or the second lowest bidder the value they're asking for. That I think the challenge there is that people have a really bad idea of understanding the value of their work. Unless you are an artist or you, this is part of your like livelihood or profession where you do charge like or you have a fixed rate in terms of like $60 per image, something like that. But most of the people, we're not expert on pricing our social media content. We're not expert on pricing our profile images. So that's another approach I've seen in terms of calculating value. There's definitely a lot more out there that I'm not aware of. I've definitely seen like thinking about how to calculate value in terms of revenue that brings in. For example, if there's a piece of content that helped to contribute X amount of web traffic and this X amount of web traffic led to like Y amount of advertising revenue, that's another way to kind of like working backward to calculate data's value. So these are all the different approaches that I've seen. I do think like each of them have its advantages and also has its limitations. So I'm a trained computer scientist, so I have my understanding of value is going to be very different from a person from a different discipline. So I think that's something that we have to, as research move forward, we have to be conscious about. And I forgot your second question. Sorry.
The second question was especially in the voluntary labor space, what motivates and drives, be it the moderators on Reddit, be it the editors and Wikipedia, if you have any insights on that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of this content we're consuming, like content on Reddit, content on Wikipedia, they are really influential. Sometimes a lot of people go to this website directly, but these data sets or this content is also the training data sets for a lot of large language models we have seen. They're in Common Crawl, which a lot of researchers uses, companies uses to generate information, knowledge. One of the reasons or key motivation for people to do this is that they want to like share their knowledge with everyone. That's very much a common motivation on Wikipedia, on Reddit, like creating a community where you can share the knowledge and support each other. It's definitely also sometimes like moderators are motivated to become a moderator because you gain like social status in your online small community. So that's something that else that people have kept in mind. So all this, I think this kind of going back to the data labor piece that I talked about at the beginning, this is where I think the boundary between what's work, what's like paid work versus what's volunteer work becomes really unclear. There's some overlap here. For example, there are a lot of, in the case of OpenStreetMap, companies actually contribute to OpenStreetMap because they want to use it as a valuable data source for your products. Another case would be open source software, where companies have developers who contribute to open source projects because their product is reliant on open source project. So this is where I think there is some overlap that we have seen increasingly, and that speaks to motivation. Like sometimes people do have like the extrinsic motivation, thinking about they have to contribute because it's part of their job or it's part of like their formal responsibility.
And getting to the present days, what do you think about the implications that generative AI can have on your studies in terms of data generation on the one end, in terms of data usage on the other?
Absolutely. This is a question that I kept thinking about these days, at least in the past 7 months, ever since OpenAI released their ChatGPT. One thing I've been trying to think about is the impact of this generative AI on the content ecosystem, where right now content exists before the deployment of ChatGPT, and then everyone have access to it. sometimes you have to pay, but most of the time you just Google it and it shows up in front of you. And with this whole deployment of AI, we have seen a lot of resistance from communities, from either like professional writers, artists, to fan fiction writers who are just publishing fan fiction content for as part of their hobby, and then to like content moderators on Reddit and Stack Exchange, where there's concerns from these different communities in thinking about how generative AI are disrupting their ecosystem. So that's something that I think it's some researchers really, and myself, are really interested in investigating, like how can we mitigate these content contributors' concerns? One thing kind of alluding, going back to the point I made earlier about transparency, I think having this sort of giving content contributors the option of seeing the impact and the value of their work is going to be really important to help them gain a good estimate of the value of their work, and so they can collectively negotiate with the platform. There has been a successful negotiation by Stack Exchange moderators where they worked with the company and the platform and established some sort of like guidances in terms of how companies should work with moderators as they move forward with their platform policies. So that's something that I think is something that I have a lot to learn from, a case that I'm really interested in learning more about. I think that's a good example of how we can think forward towards of distributing value and supporting moderators and supporting the labor that brings in all these millions of messages, millions of posts and knowledge. So that's an example that I'm trying to like draw inspiration from. But in terms of usage, I think Daniel, that's the other part you were asking about. In terms of usage, I think it's been really difficult to keep track of like what content showed up in what dataset as average internet users. For example, the whole image, the lion image dataset has billions of images. I don't have the equipment or energy or time to go in there and figure out whether like my images or my doodle is in the dataset or not. So I think tracking usage is not going to be accomplished by individual efforts. We would have to have some sort of collective infrastructure where a community can provide the guidance or play the role of a steward or governance structure, and as a way to like keeping track of the usage and negotiating like value distribution, all these type of questions. Because as individuals, it's really difficult to do that because not everyone can have the equipment and energy to like track down each pieces of information they generate. And also it shouldn't fall on individuals, like the burden shouldn't fall on individuals to do all this kind of very annoying work.
Just out of curiosity from your perspective, I'm used to study the usage of data that are kind of unconsciously created while using a service, while you're focusing on something that is much more conscious. And we are now talking about the possible usage of this data by generative AI. How do you perceive the actually awareness by users on what's behind this black screen, black mirror, just to quote the series, that is generative AI? Do you think we are already at a good level of awareness, or you think it's still quite a magic formula that gives back answers?
I love that question, Daniel. I think it's something, you're right. There's digital traces that people just unwittingly generate, and there's tons of them that is not easily accessible to a third party. And there's content that people put out there that everyone who has like the web scraper can collect them. I think just like reflecting on the question, I think it's going to be somewhat like relatively easy to detect a piece of content. You have it's possible to detect whether the content is collected or not. But it's almost impossible to get a sense of how like my browser history is being used, or getting sense of like how these like digital logs that I created for that's secured on a certain server. Like sometimes I don't even have access to that. So that's something I think, just kind of reflecting on this, it's going to be having even a bigger problem of transparency, because as end user don't have access to that. But I want to say we have seen this whole field of like the data brokers that researchers have been understanding about, like how data brokers collect information and this whole like tracking of advertising networks. So I'm not an expert on either of these domains, but it does seem like there is possibilities to understand how like these unwittingly contributed log data can be valued, can be assessed, can be audited. So that's another, I think, yeah, that's another interesting, I think that's really interesting.
You mentioned again transparency, and this brought to my mind another thought. ChatGPT is actually one of the cases that we use to talk about a transparent business model, meaning that when you enter in it, not just for the first time, but every time you enter there, you've got a clear message, very simple, very short, that goes beside the privacy policy and everything that must be there by law, which simply states, be careful to the data that you are putting here. These are going to be used to train the algorithm. Don't put sensitive data. This is a research beta or whatever it is framed. And well, at least in the definition that Tomas and I are giving about transparency in the data world, that's a very transparent way of actually declaring it. But I'm also afraid that as users, we are getting blind to this kind of messages, even though they are very simple and clear. So again, it's not the legal words written in the privacy policy. This is something user-friendly by definition that I'm afraid is not going to be effective for long, if it is effective right now. And I was wondering, what's your opinion on this? I truly believe that investing in dissemination and in the creation of a kind of digital culture that help people understanding something more about how these technologies work is important. But I also believe that, unfortunately, education has limits. So I was wondering if you have any alternatives to propose to go and solve this type of issue.
Your example really resonated with me, and it made me think of the whole privacy paradox. It's essentially, if you ask a person, do you want more privacy? Yes. But if you actually observe them, they actually give up their privacy rights all the time. I think it's we're kind of entering this similar situation with ChatGPT. Yes, everyone knows that I should be cautious about what information gave this system. But at the same time, not everyone has the awareness to stay down and actually remove all the personal information in their questions to ChatGPT. And this is where I think this kind of thinking about privacy rights, instead of thinking about it as individual rights, maybe think about it as a collective right, is going to be more helpful. So individually, when we think about privacy, the burden is really a lot. But if we can establish, kind of going back to your question, Daniel, about like how can we actually have structures to help people understand this, education has limits. Individually, we're not, everyone's going to give up their privacy rights. This is where I think establishing more of like collaborative entities that are playing the role of being a steward, being fiduciary, governing this information. And maybe also, I think a good example would be how collectives of people or data contributors come together and then establish essentially what I would call a data co-op that can determine helping to store all this information itself, but then sharing data sets with third parties after they have did a lot of privacy protections on data sets. So that's another, I think that's an example that it's a conceptual model that I often lean to in thinking about, well, right now individuals transact directly with companies or platforms supplying the data directly to them. But if we can, for example, introduce a middle person or organization that is kind of handling all the sensitive information about data, handling the question of transparency and value distribution, will that be a better system? So that's something that I've been working to work with. And to provide maybe a more concrete example, I do think there's potential API services content platforms sell their content to third parties through APIs with a fee right now. So most of them, unfortunately. Now thinking about, well, how can we, maybe APIs could be a way that all these data cooperatives can function, where data cooperatives collect data and then provide API services to the companies. The companies don't directly govern the data sets from their users or contributors. Instead, the data cooperative would actually do that information, and then they decide how the API revenue is going to be distributed across their content contributors. So that's a very, like, just like a proof of concept idea I have that I'm working on.
Yeah, I like this kind of self-regulation, self-governance approaches to looking into how is the platform or a digital company in general organized and how to then distribute value. What I found very, very interesting from the discussion we're having is that the boundaries between, let's say, supply and demand, do I contribute something or do I use something, they blur, right? So and both sides can generate additional data that the one actor in the middle can use to create additional value or capture additional value. So we had the example of the Uber driver, and I think you made a very, very important point there, saying that it goes beyond the value that the Uber driver generates for Uber. It goes beyond just the pure like fare that he generates or she generates, but also in aggregate, the all knowing where all the drivers are has a very, very big additional value that Uber can work with. Similar, and I'm holding my Aura ring into the camera. A smart ring that I use to track my sleep, for example, where I get a clear value, I pay for that, right? So there was this saying that if the product is free, then you are the product, something like that. But I'm paying for that, and I'm still adding so much additional value that goes beyond just what I get out to what Aura can use in terms of all the aggregated health data. And although they tell me that they use this in an anonymized fashion, I also could participate in a study during the Corona pandemic where they told me they use a variety of different or a huge set of users. And then they were asking me to tell the app if I was, if I tested positive, so that they could then correlate this to the changes in my health metrics. And if the data set is high enough, you could even forecast or warn people in the at some point to say, oh, maybe you should do a test because it looks like you could be infected but don't have symptoms yet. Third example, and then I stop, is a company that is called Niantic. And Niantic is the developer of a very popular game together with Nintendo, I think, that is called Pokemon Go. And although Niantic is a games company, they are first and foremost a data, particularly a cartography company. So with Pokemon Go, you run around the city and you have your smartphone in front of you, and the camera in the front camera is active. So not the one that's filming you, but the other one. And you're screening the environment, and they put some interesting Pokemons as augmented reality elements in the environment. And at the same time, they collect all the geo data because they get the data. They understand what is where, what types of objects are there, where are you? They're reading your GPS signal, and you help them while playing the game to really build, let's say, a replica of the real world, right? This is also a big part of their business model. And I'm not so sure how many gamers are actually aware of that fact. Not about that they could claim some value out of that, but just about the fact that this is happening, right? So there my question is, coming back to the initial comment that you made, Hanan, with regard to sharing value, organizing the contributions in a more like cooperative structure. What is the role of governmental actors in your opinion? And maybe one or two comments to, let's say, or ideas what governmental actors could do work on when it comes to regulation and protecting the labor side of the data work.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all these examples you have provided. And like, I'm really glad that this question of like topography came into here, because if you look at Google Maps, like a lot of the businesses are actually mapped out by volunteers. These are just in terms of, so the question about policymakers, what kind of policy we can advocate for. One most immediate step, this is kind of like building on my earlier point about transparency, and what I'm most worried about these days is really about how we should have regulations that having mandate companies to disclose what they are using the information for. Like you brought up the example of like your Ring data is going to be used for public health, and even they tell you that you're not associated with your personal information, is not associated. Like this is a great example of letting users to reflect on what data they're sharing and raise awareness of how the data is going to be used. So that's something that I do think a lot of the data regulations should push forward. This is going to be especially important in the domain of generative models. We have seen these waves of lawsuits raised by writers against AI firms thinking because their content is illegally used or their copyrighted content is illegally used. So that's something I do think is going to be a very important policy direction moving forward. But in terms of other policies, I think there are some other ideas about how imposing a tax on digital on tech platforms, especially because these are the platforms that are going to be relying on data, relying on content that's publicly sourced to make a profit. So this idea of thinking about how a general public providing a labor subsidy and establishing a special tax to account for that subsidy. That's another direction that I've seen in like some discussion around over the years. So these are the two, these are the two policies I can most immediately think of.
I'm thinking about your background also in human computer interaction. And I think one measure that Apple put or is famous for, that they offer you to, or you need to actively opt in into a lot of data sharing decisions, right? While I think other companies, it's very, very hard to find the opt out button if there's one in the first place. On the other hand, it's a question of power, right? So if you're dependent on using a particular platform, the chances that you actively opt out are probably a bit lower. But when I think about all these platforms, especially social media, but other ones, do you see a way or a path, or how do you assess this in general? Do you think from a human computer interaction perspective, thinking about maybe regulating or putting a policy in place that promotes active opt-in vis-a-vis the maybe not so clear option to opt out from being part of the data labor game?
Yeah, I kind of clarification question. Maybe this is, are you thinking of something like GDPR
that's a good one. I think GDPR, GDPR is probably a good try. Focusing on like website visits in general and what type of tracking mechanisms can be in place. And this is just one, I know this is just one part of it, but I'm also thinking about using services, right? So not just analyzing website and traffic data, but also using services and thinking about, am I willing to contribute to this kind of data pile that the provider of the service is building? And if not, is there maybe another way that I would like to contribute still, right? So there could be a necessity for a service to collect the data, monetize the data to keep the service running. And then the provider could ask me, like it is with Netflix, where you can choose between watching some advertising or you pay a higher price if you don't want to have advertising. Is there some kind of development, some cases that you may be aware of, where the provider of a service offers me as a user actively to opt out of the providing data and adding to the value capture of the platform by providing data, by just paying something for it?
Yeah, I think I have probably two points to make here. The first one is, I think the question of like, well, what if legislators or policy just mandate companies to provide this opt-in, opt-out before we use the product? My answer is probably yes, but we think about, yes, this can be very helpful for individual opt-in, but this again kind of putting the burden on the individual content contributors, on them to decide how, like, what are certain actions. Another example in this is where, for example, some AI firms allow artists to choose to opt out their artwork from the datasets, but then artists have to go through these systems and manually like upload their image and then select the one that they want to opt out from the platform, from the training datasets. So this approach is going to create a lot of burden on individual contributors, but at also the same time, does it actually provide like the immediate feedback, or like, do contributors have enough trust in the platform to do this action? That's another question. So I think this individual opt-in, opt-out option is a step in the right direction, but we also have to think about like what kind of infrastructure, what kind of do we need to build trust between contributors and platforms to actually make this mechanism actually meaningful. And an alternative of doing this is going to this idea of, well, can maybe contributors work on when they share content, can they just, for example, choose certain clauses or licensing clauses attached to their work at the beginning for once, and then they don't have to worry about it moving forward. There's one initiative that I'm involved in. It's called the Responsible AI Licensing, where we're thinking about the initial idea is how can we help developers to write up like licensing clauses on their model that they publish. So think about, well, you cannot use this model for XYZ purposes, but we're also taking a step further, thinking about how data sets or content can be attached to licensing clauses. For example, if I'm aggregating a data set and publishing a data set, then I can establish certain boundaries about whether you can use this data set for like facial recognition technology or not, or you can offer this data set in such a way or not. So I think that's another maybe more grassroots approach to thinking about how we can mitigate the concerns or issues around data sets. That's kind of leading into the existing legal framework, leveraging legal framework to achieve the purpose.
Cool. And I think a lot of things are happening. A lot of things will happen very soon. And the research you are doing is definitely relevant to understand something more of the world we live in. And talking about this, our usual question at this point is what's coming next. We already talked about some of your current projects that will be delivered in the, I hope, near future. But would you like to tell us something more about what you're working on? What do you see coming?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I already mentioned earlier about like the projects around how people react to the content being scraped by a third party. That's something that we're actively working on, but we're also kind of polling opinions from different type of contributors, from average social media users to like fan fiction writers to people who just like produce content as part of their job. So these are different populations that we're working with. And another thing I think that might be interesting for your audience is I'm also actively thinking about how to help researchers design like better licensing clauses for the datasets. As in computer science, there are conferences that have this dataset track where researchers aggregate data that they have collected from the web, or they have access to, or they have ownership to, and then they publish datasets for future research purposes or for innovation. And with all these issues we have seen around consent, privacy, ownership, copyright, I'm hoping to create a set of guidelines that can help researchers decide how to better govern their dataset or how to manage their dataset. So that's something that requires a lot of interdisciplinary efforts. So that's something I'm very passionate about. So yeah, these are two things that I've been pursuing. And then there's also this idea of how can we, I think just broadly, how can we equitably share the data revenue with everyone who has been contributing to the data set, is something that I think I'm gonna keep working on in the next few years.
That's a super exciting roadmap. I think especially with regard to the data sets that are generated in or were generated in academia or by scholars, I think they are getting more and more valuable as it gets more and more expensive to scrape the data, right? More the platforms realize through the generative AI and the high demand for training data that there is a value in the content that has been generated. So they're more and more monetizing APIs. And I think it's still in negotiation for many of the typical data sources, be it X, formerly Twitter, or others that maybe completely close their APIs or restricted the possibilities to scrape data that also were of high value to the scholars. So before we close, if we have listeners who are interested in engaging in that particular project or want to learn and follow your work in general, Hanlin, what's the best way to follow your work and get in touch?
I think my website might be the best option. I can send the link to you, and I also have my email address on my website. So I'd love to hear more thoughts on like how do we people's experiences with managing data sets or ideas of how can we better share the value of data sets more broadly.
Very good. We will, of course, put the link to your website in our show notes. And with that, I can only say thank you so much for your time, Hanlin. That was a very, very lively and I think great conversation that we have had. I very much enjoyed it. Thank you so much for coming. And just the best for your upcoming work.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the discussion as well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.